Okay. Next player is Kachiro. Testing. Paper three. Papers three.
Thank you, Wayne. So the next paper is agenda paper three. Accounting for Proceeds and Cost of Testing, PP&E. The Interpretations Committee have been discussing a request to clarify the accounting for the proceeds from selling items produced while bringing an item of PPE to the location and condition necessary for it to be capable of operating in the manner intended by management. In November, the Interpretations Committee decided to add this item to the agenda to analyze this issue further. We contacted four stakeholders for outreach, and Agenda Paper 3A summarized the result. After posting the paper, we conducted outreach to two other stakeholders, and I'd like to briefly summarize the result of the additional outreach, which are not included in the agenda paper. One organization with which we conducted outreach is the Canadian Mining Industry Task Force on IFRS. There is 3 points. First, each mining company is in a unique situation. Even within a single mining company, each ORE could create a different situation, and the company needs to apply different judgment. Secondly, in practice, in the mining industry, there is no clear-cut timing for the moment at which the asset becomes ready for use. Instead, development of the mine is a continuous process or continuum. And thirdly, before adopting IFRS, some companies used US GAAP. At that time, some companies made judgments that the asset becomes ready for use at a much earlier stage, as soon as more than minimum several minerals are extracted under US GAAP, those companies recognized losses when they started their operation. However, after adopting IFRS, these companies have tended to focus on when production becomes stable. So the other organization we conducted outreach is Canadian Oil and Gas Industry Task Force on IFRS. We heard that, in contrast to the mining group, the oil and gas group basically consider that once the production reaches a relatively low minimum threshold, for example, 10% of the level expected by management, they consider the asset is operating as intended by management, and they cease capitalizing at this point. So there is some contrast. As a result of the outreach, we have identified some issues which we'd like to draw your attention. And we identified some of the area alternatives that could be further explored. The question to the committee members is, what comments do you have on the issues identified? In addition, which of the alternatives the committee members want us to further analyze? Thank you very much.
The staff recommendation is that the staff keep working. Comments on that staff recommendation, or on the paper generally? John, Kaz?
I would agree with the recommendation that the staff keep working. I think this paper actually does identify the core critical issues in sort of the accounting for PP&E in particularly complex asset construction and development situations. And I do think that the interpretation, particularly of the phrase capable of operating in a manner intended by management, is fundamental to the accounting. I think some people read intended by management as being management says, well, it's not operating as intended until it achieves its 90% of sort of capacity, whereas others read that differently. And I think that that would certainly merit doing some further work to see if that can be clarified to try and improve consistency and reduce diversity of interpretation. I also think there's some merit in considering whether disclosures of amounts credited to the asset is one solution if it's not going to be possible to develop sort of coherent guidance on when capitalization should cease, because I think at least disclosure of the amounts credited to the asset would provide, I think, useful information for users about the amounts of sales proceeds that are actually not being recognized in revenue and instead being deducted off the cost of the asset. And perhaps considering the accounting for pre-commissioning revenues more generally and the approaches that are taken in US GAAP and why those approaches are taken, which generally tend to be de minimis amounts get credited to the asset and you generally treat it as revenue once you start selling. So I think it would be worth considering maybe why that's the approach in US GAAP and whether that's a similar approach is merited under IFRS. I think the other areas that I think would be very difficult to provide guidance on componentization and unit of account and what are items of PP&E. I think that's going down a rabbit burrow or maybe a black hole I think we would never come out of. And I think that some of the issues in this are similar to IFRIC 20. This is really about cost attribution to either sort of an asset under PP&E or inventory or P&L. But I am a bit scared off of suggesting that we look at IFRIC 20 being applied to the development phase. But I do think it is about a cost attribution. You know, you could go down the approach of saying, well, we're capable, you know, this sort of cliff effect of we cease capitalization now and we start putting things in P&L. Maybe for some of these complex asset constructions, that's actually not appropriate. What's actually happening is two things at once, and it's the attribution of costs to the PP&E and inventory that's really the appropriate accounting, and that would take you down or into an IFRIC 20 type model where you're looking at the same activity giving rise to two benefits that should be accounted for separately. But I definitely think it merits, I think that the SAF paper is on the right path. I think the issues are appropriately identified and I would keep working.
Thank you very much.
Alan, you have something you want to come in on?
I was going to probably take a slightly different tack. I was a bit concerned about the scope going too wide on this, and that I thought the original request was for interpretation of paragraph 17E of IS 16, which is about the proceeds from testing. And if I was interpreting this, I would interpret those words in relation to the revenue is specifically linked to the testing. So I think the question is, are you testing? And I think going to have a look and see whether you've got something location conditioner necessary to operate in the manner intended by management. The example I might have is something like a sports stadium where you're building 40,000 seats. You happen to have, you know, 20,000 built. You run the first season. You've got all the revenue coming in for a year with only 20,000. I don't think anybody would think that you would treat all that revenue coming in from running the sports event as being offsetting the cost. Now, you think about when London hosted the Olympics, they had a couple of test events where they tested the facilities. I think even then there's an interpretation you have to think about, are they testing the actual facilities or the systems in place to run the event? And that's where the judgment comes in as to whether they are genuinely just part of the cost of constructing or not. So I'm a bit concerned that this has morphed a little bit away from just the proceeds from testing as opposed to when you stop capitalising. And there may be two separate issues here. I think you could actually narrow this down quite easily through a rejection by saying that the words related to revenue, they only appear in relation to the testing. There's no general requirement that says you recognise revenue during the construction until you reach the point where it's a location condition. And it's, you know, it's almost, you know, it's, if you think about the structure of IS 16, it's actually in 17E as a sort of a comma, almost not an afterthought, but it's linked into that testing. And that would, I think, stop some of the really bad accounting in terms of the stuff where it's clear that they are actually producing and offsetting against that, and those situations where the revenue seems to exceed the cost of the asset, which seems a bit, doesn't sound intuitive to me. There may be a bigger issue in terms of what is the cost of capitalisation in relation to some sectors, but I think that's a separate issue, and we were asked to answer the first question about proceeds.
Yeah, I think I take your line, Alan, but in discussing the issue when it first came to the Emerging Economies Group, one of the comments that was made there was, well, how can this be testing? And couldn't you just better define testing? And the answer was that it had become kind of circular. I'm not 100% done, so anything that I do must therefore be tested. And it wasn't clear, at least in that conversation with what ultimately became the submitter, whether we could attack it that narrowly. If we could, and I think that's worth exploring, and that would stop some of the hideous practice that you've seen, fine. I think that's a valid point. If not, though, we may have to push a little farther. But let's do double check. We'll use that as a checkoff point. Okay, I have quite a few here. Kaz, I think you were next.
Brought up by my little concern about expanding the scope and working maybe a lot of testing or researching the various points. I appreciate that the bringing up various points, but we should focus on some more. One is particularly when that property or asset should be recognized. And with the observation that the current, particularly in the mining industries, that tends to be early or later stage rather than earlier. And even that uncommissioning revenue earned. So I think there's some kind of, that's the area we that seems like not intuitive. So we might need to work on that, but probably focus on that. I don't think we should expand it to the general property tax property and accounting of recognition, like manufacturing equipment, and then even that stadium, as you, Alan mentioned. We think it's kind of common, how can I say, judgment is undertaking, and then management knows when to recognize. Seems odd, but I kind of, maybe I'm not sure that industries, but seems like what I'm hearing from the mining industry seems something kind of having a practice in the recognizing a later stage. So I think we should do something, focus on that area would be one, my suggestion. And the other is I'm uncomfortable to recognize revenue while before that to recognize, before starting the depreciation or amortization. So rather maybe prohibiting that would be one route to approach, but I'm not sure what the impact would be. But even that recognizing revenue, because we proposed that agenda decision not to book it as a revenue, and then we get some pushback, but we can, I think we just need to find out why this is not acceptable, and we just need to go down to that road. Maybe another area I think I want to proceed one more time.
Okay, rather than bouncing back and forth, I'm just going to go around the room. Bruce?
Thanks. Just a couple of comments I had. The first one was, I just have to say that I thought the paper on the outreach was very, very well presented. I think I should give credit for that. The only other things I wanted to say was a lot of what we've looked at are things like the electricity in the mining sectors, where I think these are very developed practices. Because of the huge cost, the guys know where they are, they're very fixed. Kind of just changed to a couple of my manufacturing clients where the costs are maybe not to the extent as big, but are still material. A lot of them really hadn't given a lot of thought to this issue. So I think we should just be conscious that when we come out with guidance, this could represent a change for many manufacturers from where they are now, which, as I say, maybe not the quantum of what it is for these type of guys, but it's going to obviously have an impact on everybody. And I think we just got to be careful that, well, I think conscious, and we'll see that if we proceed to doing an exposure on it, that I think we could see different practices in some of the other industries, and we should take account of those.
Saying they haven't given a lot of thought up to it, but gee whiz, this is an opportunity, or?
Yeah.
Okay.
But they like the idea of being able to put more.
That was a rhetorical question. Andrew?
To the question, should the staff carry on working, my answer would be yes, but not on this. We do seem, picking up on Alan's and Kaz's comments, you do seem to have strayed a very long way from the points on sales of samples during the testing phase that exceeds the cost of testing, which is a particularly narrow fact pattern in practice, I think. But looking at the five options, if the staff do need a project, then I would say the first one, looking at when we are capable of operating in the manner intended, and this is a judgment and very dependent on facts and circumstances, and looking ahead to the end game, I just find it hard to envisage we're going to come out with anything which is particularly effective in practice. I think units of account, capitalisation, componentisation, IAS 16 offers deliberate flexibility on units of account. Do we really want to disrupt that practice, that judgment? So I guess disclosure seems like at least a tractable area of examination, as does trying to introduce a principle on pre-commissioning revenue and whether that actually should be offset. If we were going to go that route, I wouldn't separate out the testing phase, because I think that just puts pressure on the question of what do we mean by testing. So I think that might actually lead somewhere. I'm not sure that capable in the manner of operating by management will ultimately lead anywhere, but that's speculation.
Tony?
Yeah, I think I'm also troubled by what seems to be scope explosion. And I have to say, I think one or two of these issues are sort of solutions in search of a problem. I think that there is judgment required in IAS 16 to determine how you componentize, to determine what costs get capitalized, to determine when something is capable of operating in the manner intended by management. I think those are all judgments. I think they will be different across different industries. And my sense is that the committee shouldn't be trying to develop specific guidance in those areas. I don't think that's what the committee was asked. So I guess I'm with Andrew and Alan and Kaz. I'd be inclined to cross all those off the list. I think IFRIC 20 is too fresh in the mind and practice is in the process of developing, so I'd also be inclined to leave IFRIC 20 alone. So I very much prefer that we don't continue looking to expand this and go back to the question that we were first asked, which is around accounting for the proceeds. And I think that probably go back to where I was right at the beginning. I would probably have gone with an agenda decision. I'm not sure there's significant diversity in practice in what people do with the net proceeds, and I would be inclined to leave it at that. I understand that disclosure might be helpful, but to the discussion I think we've had previously, I'd point at IS1 and say if it's a material number, then disclose it. If it's a really material number, then to Alan's point, you might start to wonder whether or not that's really testing. So my sense is there's a much, much simpler solution to this, and my sense would be not to go off exploring any of these alternatives.
Martin?
Yeah, I'm pretty much with Tony. I mean, we heard about mining industry, but we haven't discussed any other industries, like, for example, the car manufacturing industry, where you might have increased testing or setup costs. We have not discussed the chemical companies or chemical industry, where you have cold and hot commission and how they deal with this issue. From my understanding, overall, it seems to be that the issue is not that material. Probably, in a way, it is balanced out between several projects within one company. For sure, if you have a startup company, it could become material. But if so, then I would guess I would find it somewhere in the general disclosures according to IRS 1. And another issue is, I mean, when we consider to recognize this as revenue or as a reduction of cost related to which asset, consider we have a component approach. So that means if we have a setup of a bundle of assets, say 25 assets which work together but overall are separate components, and you have to test them, to which kind of assets I have to allocate these, deduction. So it gets more and more complicated depending on industry and depending on facts and circumstances, and therefore I guess, along with some colleagues here, that we should not dig deeper in.
What you're saying, Martin, as I understand it, is that in some situations the opposite of what has been asserted is true, that it's actually more trouble to define, to pick out costs that would be testing and allocate revenue to them than it is to just recognize the revenue. Okay, that's fair. Reinhardt, and then Sandy, and then we'll try and wrap.
I'm also concerned about the scope creep with respect to the project. And so my comments, I think, would be consistent with what I've made last time. I think they're pretty consistent with what Tony said as well, which is, I think the issue we were asked was about proceeds of testing and what should be the how those should be accounted for. And as I said at one of the other meetings, I don't think there's much diversity in practice, or the amounts aren't all that significant. So, but if we do tackle that question, then I think the related question to that is, when is the asset capable of producing as intended by management? And with respect to that issue, I think as the outreach CAS did with respect to the mining or the oil and gas groups in Canada, there are various factors people look to, but those factors may not be the same industry across industry, and so you end up being judgment. And so to me, the most relevant thing there is disclosure of the judgments as to what when management determined an asset was capable of producing as intended by them, which may depending on the industry, what are some of the factors they look to, and then the importance of disclosure. So I tried to ring fence the project as opposed to the kind of the direction it's going.
Let me make a comment about diversity in practice. The Canadian group told us, so they think that when the asset become ready for use is a significant issue across various industry, and they consider that it is causing a diversity in practice. So that's the feedback we have heard.
Sandy?
Yeah, I guess I was curious as I read through this, and Reinhardt was talking as well. We talk about the feedback, but I was curious as to whether the feedback was consistent with the disclosures in the financial statements. So can users of financial statements take these see these decisions that have been taken? And there's one comment that says, you know, there's net negative CapEx, I think is what it says. Yeah. But with respect to all of the rest of these decisions, I mean, can you actually see them is the question. As I read this, I'm like, that's all interesting, and this is the feedback.
Right.
But does anybody but you and the person you talk to know that, i.e. the user of the financial statement, right? Because they would like to know when these decisions are taken and the comparability between entities.
Exactly.
And I don't look at those financial statements sufficiently to compare them, but I'm just curious because
right.
We're saying disclosure, but that should already be there, right?
Right. My understanding is that the only cases investor can look at the situation is IAS 1 disclosure. And the particular example is the company told us that some company had a negative CapEx. That's a kind of like significant situation, and that company decided to disclose. Other than that, I don't think investor can know how much was deducted from asset value. So that's the situation, I think.
Okay. We've had a series of challenges to the staff here, and that's fair. I have three written down here in broad categories. First is that we avoid a scope bomb, scope explosion. obviously correct, but not obvious how we would accomplish it. The principal proposal that I think was put to us was Allen's, that if we just pull it back to defining what testing means. And that would get us paragraph 17E of 16. Which is the one that says that you can deduct revenue from specifically attributable costs. That doesn't go the next step of people in practice who are deducting revenue that has nothing to do with testing, but has to do with what they assert is the period before the asset is ready for use. And this goes to Kaz's point of management knows when it is and when it isn't. Be interesting to know how they know. So if we just focused on testing, we would not address the follow-on question of revenues deducted from cost for things other than testing. And that's an approach we should take. The other proposal I heard was that we need to think about pointing people at disclosure, and that there is our disclosure requirements in IAS 1, and it'd be nice to remind them of which ones those are. I didn't hear anybody object to the staff doing much more work, and I think this is guidance to the staff as to which areas to work on. I would suggest that the staff needs to build in a self-destruct mechanism using my bomb analogy or somebody's bomb analogy. You have to look at some of these questions, but you need to decide up front when you will know that you've looked too hard. And I think that's your first challenge. Is to say, okay, we can't ignore something that's out there, but we need to understand when it's gone too far. Some of the committee members are suggesting you've gone just about far enough. So we need to know when to stop. We need to focus on Alan's proposal, which I think a couple of others have seconded after he made it, that perhaps the best way to deal with this is to focus on testing. To pull back the scope, but that's your challenge. So, any other helpful suggestions for this?